Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we do have a special panel discussion specific to a 2026 outlook for munis. Joining us for today's panel discussion, glad to welcome Dan Close, head of municipals at Nuveen with over 25 years experience. Nuveen manages more than $200 billion in municipal bonds. We're also joined today by Doug Vesicchio, head of municipal sales, trading, and underwriting with UBS, and then moderating our conversation for today from the UBS Chief Investment Office, a fixed income strategist for the Americas, Sudeep Mukherjee. So a big welcome to our guests. Sudeep, let me now pass it over to you to lead today's panel discussion. Welcome.
Thank you, Dan, and good morning to the special panel discussion on munis and the outlook for 2026. So, welcome, Dan Close from Nuveen. Greatly appreciate you joining the call. I'm sure our audience will benefit from it, from your insights, your front row seat in the muni space. So, first of all, a warm welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Sudeep. I really do appreciate getting on the podcast today.
Excellent. So, a lot happened in the muni market in 2025. Munis came under pressure in the first half, steep sell-off in April, enjoyed strong rallies in September and October, but on a year-to-date basis, still underperforming other fixed income assets. Story has been one of supply. Supply has been very elevated. The curve is steep, but macro uncertainties also linger. So quite a complex backdrop. But in that backdrop, first of all, would like to ask you, Dan, how do you see munis performing in 2026? What's your outlook on supply is a question on everyone's mind. And then from the perspective of our client base and FAs, how should retail investors be positioned in terms of duration, credit, and sectors given your views on the market? So kind of an all-encompassing question just to start with, but what happened to your thoughts on that?
There's certainly a lot to unpack to start, Sudeep. But yeah, you know, we certainly agree that the story is beginning to resonate a lot more. I spent a lot of time on the road going to UBS offices. And I think especially in the late summer, you know, we really did see this flip of the switch and the story begin to resonate. But, you know, first to the underperformance, it still remains the case that munis are the worst performing fixed income asset class on a year-to-date basis. And I think that really presents an incredible opportunity. We often go in and compare muni performance to that of the Barclays aggregate. And the Barclays Ag is just the S&P 500 of fixed income. It's ABS and MBS and govies and corporates. And through Friday, munis were underperforming the aggregate by 248 basis points, which is, you know, as you mentioned, just pretty meaningful underperformance. And looking back over the last 25 years or so, there's really only three other times where we underperformed this much, and that's the GFC, that's during the Meredith Whitney interview in 2011, and that's COVID. So this underperformance is, as you mentioned, pretty meaningful. It was much, much worse at the end of August. It was underperforming by 470 basis points. But, you know, as we looked at it, there wasn't a really good reason for this underperformance. The muni exemption was codified with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act in July. Fundamentals have remained very, very strong. But as you mentioned, supply really did get elevated, and I think a lot of that was because of the uncertainty of the exemption. Some deals got pulled forward. The curve got steeper. But I think the biggest issue we had in the muni market and the underperformance we've had has just been a little bit of a crisis of confidence, where April and Liberation Day hit, every fixed income market was down considerably. But because our market has such a large retail presence, you know, we didn't see these buyers, the retail buyers, really come back into our space like we saw in corporates, with, you know, more institutional buyers coming back and recognizing the value. And so as a result, I think we did lag. And you know, I think we're starting to see a good deal of the performance coming back since the end of August through last night. Munis are now outperforming the ag by about 217 basis points. So we've really made this, I think, a fantastic comeback. But I think this comeback is still in the very, very early innings right now. I think we still have a lot more time for this story to catch up. And I think specific to your questions, you know, our outlook for 2026 is that we are still very much in the early innings of this performance comeback. And we have a piece coming out sometime in the next week or so. Our outlook for 26 is, you know, that we're going to see sustained inflows into munis, that we're going to have this virtuous upward cycle of NAVs going up, which leads to more money coming into funds and ETFs, which then begets more and more inflows coming in, which begets greater NAVs. And I think you see that virtuous upward cycle coming. We do still think supply is going to be elevated. We anticipate $600 billion for the year. But I don't think there's much to really be concerned with that. I mean, the only reason supply is going to be up so much is because it's just much more expensive to do these large-scale capital projects. You know, for instance, if you look at the cost of paving just a mile of highway, compare it to 5 years ago, it's up nearly 68%. So, you know, I don't think that we should be too concerned with the elevated supply. I think what we're most focused on in our outlook is inflows. And we think that inflows are going to continue to drive performance. We think that we have a very good opportunity to outperform. And I think given where we are versus the corporate market versus other larger fixed income markets, we've just got a lot to catch up. And I think that with the fundamentals remaining very good and with us and the U.S. economy hitting a bit of a soft spot, municipals are really the place you want to be, given that these are essential service monopolies, and think that, you know, a combination of extending a bit on duration, getting into healthcare and higher ed sectors, you know, buying 5% coupons versus fours, AMT versus non-AMT. There's just a lot of different ways that you could pick up this underperformance, and we think that we have a very, very good story coming into to 2026.
Excellent. That was a fantastic overview. Upward virtuous cycle, if I were to grab those three words. That sounds very, very encouraging for muni investors. So let's pivot to a different side of the market. It's great to hear that 2026, you're very optimistic on muni performance next year. But if we could pivot to a different angle, so munis, as we all know, is a single security asset class held by retail investors for the most part, and that's not going to change dramatically anytime soon. But over the last few years, and maybe even more recently, you've seen fairly robust growth in SMAs and ETFs. The impact of technology, and with, you know, can't help ask you with all the discussion around AI. So, given all those things, with regards to the investment landscape in munis, how do you see things changing over the medium to long term? Where are the opportunities? What should investors be aware of with regards to these issues?
Yeah, I certainly would agree with the sentiment. The puck is certainly very much moving to SMAs and ETFs. You know, I look at our business at Nuveen. We've got more than $50 billion in SMAs, more than 50,000 accounts, and that's just been an explosive growth engine for us, and I think for, you know, the entire competitive landscape. This idea in the SMA space of owning your own individual bonds, you know, being able to in-kind them if you ever need to leave the relationship, the cost of SMAs just going down to near nothing, I think have all really been good for the asset class. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, the SMA growth is just going to continue. I think with the customization that you can afford in your SMA portfolios, being very specific as to what you own, what you don't want to own, the tax efficiency. And I think, you know, you had mentioned the technology side, and I think the entire idea of tax loss harvesting for the SMA product line just makes it that much more of an efficient vehicle. And I think those that can harness the technology to effectively tax loss harvest, to make this a vehicle that not only does well from a total return standpoint and an income generating standpoint, but becoming just a very tax efficient vehicle is just going to continue to power its growth. And I think for those same reasons, especially the tax efficiency side, we're seeing ETFs really come in and challenge traditional 40 Act mutual funds. And you could just look at year-to-date flows, ETFs just absolutely outpacing by a very good measure your traditional mutual fund flows. And I think that makes sense. The ETF industry has lagged in the muni space. I think it's caught up very recently in the last couple of years on the passive side. And I think especially with active ETFs growing as well, we're going to continue to see more and more assets going into the ETF side. You know, I could speak briefly on the tech side. There is just a large spend on the buy side to get better both on the ETFs, where any passive strategy that you have, you're minimizing tracking error and being as tax efficient as possible. And I think especially on the research side on the municipals, we've seen AI really come in and transform practices. Where an average buy-side analyst might spend half of his or her time in the past finding the very difficult-to-find, city council meeting notes and then spending the other half of the time analyzing it, we're just seeing these greater efficiencies come into our marketplace where your buy-side analyst is now spending 70% of his or her time actually doing the analysis and less time searching for these sometimes archaic corners of information in our market. Sure. So I think it's, our market's certainly on this trajectory of getting more tax efficient, better and faster and cheaper. And I think that these are all very good things for FAs who are interested in the asset class. So we're starting to make this very slow transition to become closer to other fixed income parts of the marketplace.
Well, thank you. That's really great news, and this is something that FAs are really interested in as to what are the newer ways to invest in this market, what benefits those get, and much more to come on these topics. But Dan, thank you so much for joining us today and spending a few minutes from your busy schedule. I'm sure we will have you back at some point, but it's great. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you as well, Dan.
Let's now get in Doug Vitticio into the conversation. Doug also has a front row seat in munis at UBS. So Doug, let me start by asking you, what trends have you seen from your seat this year, and what are some of the main themes that you're seeing in the market?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Sudeep, for having me as well. I think Dan covered, some of the large salient points that we've been seeing. And I'll start from sort of a bigger picture standpoint. The muni market is always fairly sensitive to the technicals, meaning the supply and demand curves, mm-hmm. That come into our marketplace. I think we talked about how supply has been increasing. It really started last year. Last year, we saw about a 40% increase in total new issuance versus the previous year. And I think this year, we'll probably see another 10 or 15% growth in new issue. Normally, that's, not particularly great. We'll cause some underperformance, but I think the inflows that we're seeing, both on the mutual funds and ETFs, as Dan pointed out, have been able to meet this increased supply. So far, year to date, by one measure, we've seen about $41 billion of inflows, about $26 billion of that in ETFs, about $15 billion in funds. But that doesn't tell the whole story because there's also the individual bond buying that's going on. There's the SMA growth that Dan talked about. Even at UBS, we've seen another 15% increase in our overall volumes this year. So we are seeing that inflow meet the higher demand. We're also seeing improved liquidity. I think you touched on it with the fintech part of it. We've seen more electronic trading, sort of the ECNs and ATSs, the electronic venues for trading. And that's really helped the liquidity in the marketplace. We've seen more algorithmic trading operations, you know, even at UBS, we're instituting some algo, you know, predictive price models into our own operation. Again, seeing growth in smaller transactions, which is great. You know, municipals, from a liquidity standpoint, you know, tends to have a lot of smaller pieces because of the retail element to the product. Under 200 bond pieces is now 26% of the market. That's a 15% growth over the last 5 years. So good liquidity now, even on the smaller pieces. In total transactions this year, we've seen a pretty measurable increase there as well. I think we're going to hit an all-time high this year in total municipal transactions. So this is all very good for the market. The ability to transact, you know, less friction costs, you know, tighter bid-ask spread, is all a very positive development for the market. And, you know, again, some of this is driven by the cheapness. You know, Dan talked about, you know, being an opportunity right now in the market. Because we've stayed on the cheaper side, I think retail has noticed that. You know, yields have stabilized in here. Inflation has stabilized. All of this is sort of bringing the retail money back into the product, or into the product more so than even the year before. And the last thing I point out is on the tech, you know, the fundamentals of the market remain very healthy. State budgets are healthy. Fund balances are above historic levels. Rainy day funds for a lot of states are at their nominal highs. And bond ratings have remained positive. So positive actions in 25 are 1.1 times versus the negative rating action. So, you know, I think overall liquidity, cheapness in the market, higher yields, strong fundamentals are really what we've been seeing here in the secondary. It's really driving, you know, a lot of the activity.
Great. That's really nice to hear that you have a constructive view on the market, and especially good to hear about the role of technology helping both liquidity and price discovery, two things that are really important to the muni market. So given all of that, how do you see the muni market playing out in 2026? Where do you see the best opportunities?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think both you and Dan mentioned that supply is going to stay on the elevated side. I mean, we're seeing projections come in anywhere from, you know, around where we're going to close this year in sort of the 530 to 550 range, and then as high as 640 billion. So, you know, I think Dan's got it around 600, seems to be, you know, sort of the sweet spot in the middle. That's, you know, that's going to remain elevated. And so that's one half of the equation. But I think, you know, the demand side is going to follow through here. I think as the Fed continues to cut rates in here and drive the shorter end of the curve down, it's going to most likely be pushing money out the curve. I think short-term instruments like CDs, money market savings accounts, as the Fed cuts, I think those products probably become a little less attractive, and there'll be an incentive to come out the curve to meet this elevated supply. I think the, you know, a dovish Fed and inflation expectations coming down will also help from the supply side. I think if we do get into a lower rate environment, what we will tend to see, especially from retail, is a desire to buy, say, 5% type coupons or higher, and they tend to buy the shorter call bonds, and that really suppresses the dollar price and creates a dollar price that's a lot lower than a longer dated call. I particularly also like 4% coupon bonds. May not be as popular right now, but I think if there's an expectation for lower yields moving forward, having something with some convexity to it so that you pick up some capital appreciation, perhaps more so than a higher coupon, shorter call bond, or having some sort of mix between those two probably makes sense from a retail perspective. I think what everybody needs to remember is, you know, when they make an investment, it's the after-tax return. And when you look at municipals from a credit quality standpoint, and an after-tax return, it's really hard to beat this product. And that's, you know, that should continue to drive demand.
Great. Thank you. Those are great comments. So in closing, I think summarizing what Dan and Doug mentioned, munis underperformed this year, but fundamentals are strong, inflows are good, and that sets up munis for a strong 2026. The excess supply should not be feared as long as flows remain good, and that's the expectation. Technology is transforming the landscape, even in munis. Better price discovery, stronger liquidity, more products. So all that is good news for investors. So thank you both Dan and Doug for your insights and comments. We hope the audience, you enjoyed our thoughts on the market. Let me turn it back to Dan Cassidy.
Okay, Sudeep, Dan, Doug, thank you very much for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients. That will conclude today's 2026 Munis panel discussion and outlook for Munis in 2026. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.